Welcome to Curating the Curious, the podcast that celebrates staying curious in life and never settling into a box. In the world of buzzwords, I think we've all heard the term generational trauma. But what about generational joy? I mean, how much more interesting is that idea, leaving a legacy of joy? Is it possible? I have no idea, but I definitely, definitely want to try. And I will never forget the day that I read and wrote down those two words by Laura Aziz. At that particular time, I was knee deep in sifting through everything that was less than joyous in my life. It was not a wonderful time in life. But in that moment, Laura's words gave me hope. And not just hope, but also a new target for me to aim for. For the first time in a very long time, I considered there could actually be another side to all of this mess that I had been so focused on for so long. And for just a few moments, I took my eyes off of that gigantic peak that I had sitting in front of me in my path. And I realized, okay, this is just a moment in life and there would be better days. All of this examination and healing of all of these wounds and all of this struggle and strife, it could actually result in passing down generational joy? I mean, I never, ever had thought of it in that way. And it was this total revelation. And 2023 is becoming that year of remembering to take note of all of the moments of wonder and awe and laughter and flipping fun. I mean, fun. I am ready to have some freaking fun, you guys. I forgot how to have fun for a while, a long while, and it sucked. And I am ready to get back to my fun self because believe it or not, I'm a fun person. When I think of getting back to the fun and the joy, I always think of that moment with Laura Aziz. So today, I'm doing something that I've never done before on this podcast. I'm re-releasing an episode from the past. This one with Laura Aziz was one that really stayed with me. It really affected me. Laura's ideas, her way of speaking, always hits me. And I find myself actually thinking back to certain quotes of hers or things that she's written quite often. I think I actually need to bring her back again. But before we do that, I wanted anybody who didn't hear this to get the chance. And if you already did, it's probably worth another listen. She is just a remarkable person. I'm waiting for her to write a book. I think that I don't know how to explain it, but there's just something really special about the way that words come out of her mouth, about the way that she switches things into a different light for me. Sometimes it's just like a quick little comment on Instagram and I go, oh, whoa, she did it again. And I write these things down, you guys. So I don't know. I am predicting that this woman is somebody you're going to hear from big time in the future. But for now, let's re-listen to this episode or listen to it for the first time and tell me what you think. I love hearing what you guys think. So, you know, message me on Instagram, post about it, put it in your stories, leave a review. That would be wonderful. Okay, here's Laura Aziz. And I got a few messages from people telling me, the queen of morning pages, Laura, just started a group. I swear it was like within the first 2 weeks that I had just began my journey. So it was like the craziest synchronicity moment.
Oh, and then I love this.
I found you. But I knew who you were and yeah. I knew of your work, but I didn't know anything about the morning pages. I didn't know that you had been doing this for years, like none of it.
I mean, it's that weird thing, isn't it? Like when you just kind of mention one thing and then suddenly everyone's like, oh, let's just talk about that one thing. And I'm like, sure, what else have I got to talk about at this point? I mean, we're in lockdown. I'll just do loads of stories about this because something to do.
Totally.
Then you attract like certain people and you're all at this different place, but at the same time, it's so nice. Yeah, it was so nice that you found me that way.
I'm just so thankful that they reached out and told me. And then I ended up going down the rabbit hole of watching all your saved stories on it. And I was like,
I'm so sorry.
Man, this person is so funny. I had no idea how funny you were. Like, I've just found out so many things about you, and I'm just really excited to have you.
You're so sweet. I was just like, me? You want to talk to me? Are you sure, Liana? It'll be fine. I won't swear. I was like, okay, don't swear. Just...
You can swear.
Are you sure?
I swear.
I always feel funny about swearing in front of Americans. I don't know why. I feel like I should be a bit more proper.
No, don't be proper with me, please. Don't.
It'll slip out. This is the problem, because, you know, I'll try and then it'll just come out anyway and I'll be like, oh, God, there we go.
No, that's what I love about you. Let it all flow. I'll just put a little explicit thing on it and we'll be good.
18, over 18 zone.
So today I want to talk to you about all the things having to do with morning pages and your nest building and just the super intriguing way that your brain works. But first, I want you to tell us the book that you believe everyone should read and why.
Okay. I mean, I feel like I need to say this is such a hard question. You know, right? This is such a hard question because the level of responsibility. But the book that came to me straight away was a book that I kind of feel like this about all books, that books find you when they're ready to be read by you.
Yep.
I feel like this just happens all the time to me. You know, you could pick up a book and you're like, nah, I can kind of see, but nah. And then you'll maybe come back to it like years later and you're like, oh, this book changed my life. Yep. Why did I never realize that before?
Yeah.
So I feel like this is the book you should buy, put it on your shelf, and when it's ready to be read, it will tell you, because it's quite specific. Mm. And it's called Anamkara, Spiritual Wisdom from the Celtic World. And it's by an Irish poet called John O'Donoghue.
Hmm.
It's kind of, the best way I can sum this book up is that it's about the inner worlds that we all carry, whether you call it like your soul or your spirit, just that kind of very deep inner part of us, and how that affects our relationships to everything. So our relationship to self, relationship to others, to the world, to work, creativity. He's a poet. So obviously I picked it up because I knew I was going to talk about it. Nearly every page I've like underlined something three times because, you know, it's just, I feel like I could read you any piece out of context, but you'd still get so much from it.
Oh, wow.
He has so much wisdom, and he can just kind of get to the real core of things. Like, I'm not doing it any justice. It's just a really beautiful book. And I think it's one of those books, like I kind of joked when I first read it, like, oh, it's my Bible. Like, it's the kind of book that will see you through so many stages of life.
Wow.
So buy it, put it on your shelf and wait.
I've never heard of it.
It's so good. There's actually, he is really like interesting. I mean, obviously he's a poet and he's Irish, so that's where the Celtic thing comes from.
Yeah.
But there's a really good, not to promote another podcast on your podcast.
Oh, I don't care.
there's a real episode that he's on being.
Uh-huh.
I think it's called The Beauty of Landscape.
Okay.
And that's the first time I heard him talk. And he's actually died since. So it was a few years ago. But that podcast, I've listened to it so many times because it's just so beautiful and just makes you really think, you know, he's talking about the landscape of self, but the actual world and you within it. It's, yeah.
Oh, nice.
Listen to it if you can.
So how do you spell it in the beginning? Can you say it again?
So it's Anamkara. So that's two words. So it's Anamkara, Anamkara, which means soul friend.
I'm intrigued by that.
I mean, I'm going really deep straight away.
No, I love it. I love it. I love hearing about books that I've never heard of.
Yeah. Well, sometimes you kind of end up in a circle where everyone's reading, especially, and just culturally, right? Everyone seems to be reading the same things at the same time.
Yeah.
So then you hear something that's, oh, we haven't all read this yet. This is cool. Let's all read this now.
Yeah. Yeah. That's why I love this part of the podcast. I'm always just either reminded of something that I need to reread or just completely taught about something new. So I love it. And what is your favorite quote?
So this is where I can bring the level down. Like, this is... Because I was like, okay, I know what I have to say. But there was that part of my brain that was like, Laura, is this really what you're going to say? Because I feel like you know me a bit, right, from the internet. So you kind of, you probably, it doesn't surprise you. Like, I have notebooks everywhere in my house, everywhere. Like, and I just write things down all the time, like some poetry or some lyrics or like a beautiful passage from a book. And, you know, that there's this real feeling, like with a quote, that it should be pretty, like should be really beautiful. But then I was like, no, look, the thing that I'm going to say, it just kind of cuts to the core of what all the beautiful quotes mean to me. Mm-hmm. So it's someone called Gary Vee, who, like, I think I would describe him as kind of like a business entrepreneurial YouTuber.
Gary Vaynerchuk.
Yes, Gary Vaynerchuk. Yeah, Gary Vee. Like, so super masculine, right? He has a very specific energy vibe, I would say. But he did this video, like, I don't know how many years ago it was. And it was like this 30-second video where someone came up to him on the street and said, oh, Gary, like, give me 3 words that will inspire me for the rest of my life. And he just turned around and said, you're going to die.
Oh, that's perfect for me.
Like, in a certain context, you could take it so morbidly, couldn't you? But
I'm very morbid.
Okay, cool. Oh, my God. I mean, we could just talk death the whole podcast.
Seriously.
Thing is, though, like, for me, like, it's this value that I really do try and hold it very closely, constantly. And that's, if you really want to live like a full, meaningful life, that you also have to grasp at the same time that it is going to end, that it's finite, that anything we do, you know, it has to be done in the context of, but we're only here for a short amount of time. Mm-hmm. So we might as well make it as meaningful as possible.
Yeah.
Oh. And you're going to die. Just really, I mean, cuts through to the very core of it, doesn't it? But I think it can be this really positive framework for inspiring that way of looking at things, like, okay, so if I'm going to die, then how do I want to spend my days?
Wow.
Because my days make up my life, right? Like, who do I want to love? What work do I want to do? Of course I should make that piece of art. Like,
oh, Laura, I'm like speechless right now. I'm not kidding. I don't know what response you expected, but this is kind of what drives my entire life, is the thought of death, and that at any moment, I know it could all be over. What do I want to leave behind? And what do I want to put out there into the world? And it's literally, I am writing this down and I'm putting this on my vision board, which, well, maybe I shouldn't do that because I don't want to die, but no, I'm going to put it up somewhere. Yeah.
I mean,
I'm going to put it up like on my computer.
I mean, it's really like, I went through a stage, like, I'm really lucky. I mean, I obviously do. You know, I was going to say, I'm really lucky to have friends who get it. But, you know, obviously you kind of are going to attract the people who think the same way. But like, one of my friends and I, we went through a phase where anytime we questioned ourselves, like, oh, can I do this or should I do this? And we would just all caps text each other, you're going to die. Like,
yeah,
of course you should do the thing. Of course you should do that thing that makes you feel alive, because what else is there? I mean,
oh, man,
I don't.
This is it.
You're making me think, Brianna.
I can, like, literally just toss all the rest of the questions.
I mean, you're making me think that, like, death is almost my love language. Like, because it's just context, isn't it? It's just so much context for every single, you know, and I don't mean it in that way that, you know, you have to do all the things and that you should fill the space. It's that you should just be intentional with the space, right? Intentional in the day.
Exactly.
And maybe it actually means doing nothing and not doing that thing, because saying no is also really important in the context of living. But yeah.
Oh my gosh. I could just write a list of how those 3 words guide my life, but it's in everything that I do. And I don't know. Somebody once pegged me with some title, and I don't know what it was, but it also said that I'm obsessed with death. And I said, yeah, you're totally right. So,
I mean, that makes me love you even more. Because it's that thing. It is so that thing. Like, how can you live with, you know, how can you truly be alive just without understanding that it's not forever, and that, you know, they're two halves of the same coin, aren't they? Living and dying. Like,
yeah. And it's like, you know, just stop. caring about what everybody thinks about what you're doing, you're gonna die.
Yeah.
Like, just live your life.
Yes.
Yeah. And the whole self-portrait thing, that's why I do it. I'm like, I got to leave some evidence that I was here. Don't forget about me.
Yeah.
I'm going to die.
I mean, the legacy thing is also really interesting, right? Like,
yeah.
I mean, I feel like it's really complex, but that's part of it too. Like, you leaving the portrait, of course, like, I was here, I am here now. And I was here at some point. Like, that's a really powerful statement to claim that.
Oh, man. Wow. I'm so glad that you said that quote. I can't believe I've never heard it. I'm writing it down. I don't even need to write it down. It's imprinted in my brain.
I mean, that's the great thing about it. Like, you don't have to really remember very much. Like, oh, I've got it. There we go. That's it. Done.
You're going to die.
You're going to die.
Oh, man. You are so... The more I get to know you, the more I'm like, oh, my gosh, where has she been all
I know.
Life?
I feel like our kindred spirit. I mean, the moment anyone tells me that they're into death, I'm like, yes. Doesn't sound weird to me. It just sounds really positive.
Seriously. And I bring it up sometimes in talks and people are like, uh-huh. And it gets glossed over and we kind of move on.
Yeah. I mean, that's how we view death culturally as well, yeah. Right? It's just like, oh, don't talk about that. Yeah. It's a really difficult one.
Exactly. Yeah. And another thing that I learned about you today was your fascination with the dream analysis thing. And I didn't know about that. I just saw you announced that you're doing this Clubhouse talk on dream analysis. And I'm like, I haven't seen you talk about this before.
Well, do you know what? I haven't really spoken about it because it's kind of a private thing, isn't it? I guess dreaming.
Yeah.
Because I've been running the Morning Pages group, and in the last kind of week or so, it came up quite a lot that people would start mm-hmm. with whatever they had dreamt. I mean, I kind of think it's probably natural from that kind of time of day that you're writing, isn't it? It's the first thing on your mind. But I don't know how long. From a child, I've been interested in dreams and would often like lucid dream so that I knew I was mm-hmm. dreaming when I'm dreaming and kind of steer the dream in a certain way, especially when I was younger. Like if it was a bad dream, I'd be like, oh, I know I'm dreaming and I can change the outcome of this dream.
That's crazy. My daughter is obsessed with dreaming.
Really?
And telling me about her dreams every day, and she can steer her dreams. And then she asks me to add in my experience. And I'm like, honey, I don't know. I don't remember my dreams. I don't know what to tell you.
This makes me so excited for her. I just feel like it's an amazing skill.
It is. It's something I know nothing about.
Come to the chat, Leanna. Come to the chat.
I have to, if not just to even learn from my daughter to help her, because she talks about it, I would say 5 to 6 days a week. She wakes up and talks to me about her dreams and tells me how she steered it a new way.
Cool.
This is a whole world I don't know about, but I'm on a timeout from Clubhouse right now, but I'll be back. I'll be back by then.
Have you become an obsessive?
Oh, yes. It started ruling my life to where I was stopping doing things just to click on and see what room had started and who was in it.
I mean, for someone who's curious, it's like the ultimate kind of drug, right? Because you're like, oh, I could just peek in there. Oh, I could just see what they're doing.
My timeout has been since Friday, so I'm ending it tomorrow.
Okay. We're not doing it for like a week and a half, so you'll be fine.
Okay, good. Good. I'll be back in by then. I'm going to give myself restrictions, but I'll fit that one in there. So when I don't know if you saw yesterday, but I asked the listeners to give me some questions for you. And Vicky from Story of Your Life Photography, she sent some questions. And
oh, that's so sweet.
She is so sweet. I actually talked to her on Clubhouse for the first time last week and after messaging for so long. And she is the sweetest.
Oh, that's so nice.
I know. She said, how can Laura stay so original and what inspires her? Also, I love Laura so much.
Oh my God, Vicky, I'll pay you later. I didn't know I was going to say that. I find this so interesting because I don't think of myself as particularly original.
Oh, I do.
So that's really interesting to know that somebody else does.
I do too.
Oh, really? I mean,
I really do.
That's so interesting. I mean, I kind of feel like I never set out, like I would never make something with the intention, like, this has to be different. This has to be original. It will just be, oh, this interests me. So that's what we'll make.
Yeah, I can tell that.
But yeah, so I don't think there's an answer to it because I don't see it. Like, I just feel like, oh, it's just how I'm seeing the world at this point. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it does. And then what inspires you, I think, is a bit more original than what inspires a lot of people from what I see, that you kind of, the things that you put out there and then the things that you repost even in your stories, I feel like you have a different way of reaching in and being inspired. So that's another thing she wanted to know, which I think might answer the first question.
Yeah, the kind of the things that interest me that then is obviously informing what's made. And the honest answer I kind of feel like is, I feel like I could pay attention, anything I can pay attention to will interest me eventually. if I can sit with something long enough, I'll find that there's something that I'm going to find interesting about it at some point.
That's really, okay, I have to tell you this, how weird this is. Yeah. I just did this episode on paying attention versus getting attention.
Ooh, yeah.
And then you just said that and I was like, oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. And I think they do go together because I'm not sharing or trying to find out something for any external reason. Mm-hmm. You know, it's never like, oh, this would be good if I could make something like this, or oh, maybe that would be really popular. Like, that never kind of enters my head. Like, I am always trying to fulfill something within myself rather than outside of myself.
Yep.
You know, and I know that I kind of talked about this in the Morning Pages group, but this idea that we're always just trying to fulfill a need, right? So whenever I make something or want to read something or engage with something, it's because there's some part of me that needs it at that moment. Right. And if I can keep coming back to that, it's not easy. Also, you know, like, getting to know yourself's pretty hard, isn't it? But if you kind of, the more you do it, the more you're like, oh, this is what I want. This isn't because I think what I this isn't an expectation that I've placed on myself, or that I think this is what the algorithm wants or that my peer group is making. It's kind of detaching from that, which, you know, is a process. I think I did make a conscious decision a few years ago that I was feeding myself probably with not the things that I needed to be feeding myself with, and that I needed to push out of that, because we all do it, right? We all get in a rut. Yep. and we kind of seek the things that we think we should be seeking. And we surround ourselves with people who are making similar work to us. But actually, I think you have to push out of that a bit. And if you can kind of just look on it as an adventure. I mean, you're the perfect person, right? Because you're curious about the world as a whole. It's not like, oh, I'm interested in this one very specific kind of photography and that's where I'll stay. It's like, right, well, actually, everything could inform that. Music, mm-hmm, or other kinds of art, psychology, dreaming, everything can inform the way we live, and breaking out of the kind of restrictions we sometimes place on ourselves.
Yeah. And I think that just answered Vicky's questions about you being original, because your intention when you make things is not to elicit a response. Your intention is just to make whatever comes to your mind. And so I think that that's where originality comes from. And that's why there's so few original things happening now, because a lot of people draw their inspiration from what they're consuming in social media or whatever their source is. But yeah, I think that, I don't know,
that's such the perfect way to put it. Yeah, that it's not, that it's the process. It's never like the end product for me. Right. It's it never kind of comes into my head like, oh, this is what I'll make and that's how I'll share it. It's like, oh, this could be fun to try this or do this or interesting in some way. Detaching from the end product.
I feel like it's so rare that people are driven by that. I feel like that's the number one, you know, with, you know, if you're coaching or teaching or doing any type of thing like that, the number one thing holding everybody back is that they're not thinking like that. That it's always like, well, I'm not getting this response, or there's so much emphasis put on what is the response from the public when someone creates something. So yeah, I love that you say that. And the one thing that I tell people, I'm like, you've got to, if you find yourself getting caught in that trap, hold on to your work for yourself. Yeah. Don't put it out there. Don't post it. If it needs to be a week or 2 weeks or a month or even a year, hold on to it until it's just yours. And any response that you get from other people does not affect your feeling about it.
I love that advice. I love that so much because I feel like a bit of a hoarder, like with my work.
I am too.
I totally feel like I realize actually it's to the point where even in my stories, sometimes I'll just take rubbish iPhone pictures, but I don't share them straight away because I'm like, no, they're mine.
Like, yeah. You're like protective over Zoe Wittering saying that she's protective over her prints when they come.
Definitely. And it's also like that thing of not that I don't want to engage in conversation, but also at the same time, I'm happy with this. Like, I don't necessarily need you to tell me that you like it even. Like, I'm so glad that you might connect to it. But at the same time, you know, for a long time, I was like, oh, should I just turn the comments off? But, you know, it kind of looks a certain way, you know, like, I don't want to be standoffish. But at the same time, like, I don't want you to feel like you need to comment. And also, I'm completely happy for you to just sit with your own feelings about it too. Like, that's cool. You know, like, sometimes, you know, I think we've forgotten, like, silence speaks as well, doesn't it? Like, I like to sit with my work and just be quiet with it. And maybe there's a part of me that kind of is like, oh, I like to just put things out there and have no responses. Like, just out of interest, it would be different, right? I mean, I don't even know what that would look like at this point because we're so used to the instant feedback on everything we make.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm saying it now, like I'm saying it so easy breezy, right? And I'd probably be like, why has no one commented? What's happened? But yeah, as an experiment, I think it would be fun.
That's true. I mean, I'm listening to you say that and I think I'm pretty good most of the time, but then I do think like, oh, what would I do if I got 2 likes when I posted something?
Yeah.
Yeah, it would definitely affect me. So yeah, we're all victim to it in some way.
Yeah.
It's just, you've got a pretty strong stance on it, which I feel like is rare. And I don't know if it can be learned, but if it can, I hope to learn it.
I don't think I've always been, I don't know if you could teach it, but I think it's just, and also it's ever changing, right? I might be like completely, feel really differently in like 3 months' time when I've been in lockdown for 57 years and I'm like, no, somebody validate me instantly, please. But at the moment, you know, I'm kind of like, this is the place that I've got to with my work. But also maybe once you start to create new and different things then it will change again.
Right.
I think,
yeah,
it's just like that dance of this is where I am now, and hopefully I'll hold on to it. But, you know, I'm real human. This is just part of being human is to feel these things about the things we care about as well, because we all care about our work.
Oh, totally. I love the way that you put it though, and your view on it. For me, it's really apparent. And so I loved it when Vicky asked that because I was like, yeah, she really is very original. And there is something different about the intention behind her work. And I never try to judge anyone for the kind of work they do. There are some that are, you know, kind of like the shock and awe photographers that it's like, how can I, you know, shock you enough and my photo bounces off the page and they get thousands and thousands of likes. And I don't judge that either. It's like, you know, everybody's got their own way, but there's something to be said for just not even having the intention of getting attention.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, definitely.
I love it.
Well, thank you both so much.
Oh, I mean it. Well, I was looking through your site because I'm, you know, researching everything. And I saw something on your family session area of your site that you wrote that was so beautiful, and it really resonated with me and what I feel about being in photos and just taking them in general. And you titled it For the History Books. And this is kind of like to the moms of the families that you photograph, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you wrote, "We all deserve this, a quiet moment in the light, to shine, to be seen, to be put in our own history books." And there's more, but I really wanted to focus on that because it's everything I feel. And it even goes up to the, you're going to die.
Yeah, it's the legacy, right?
Yeah. And it was just written so beautifully. And it's kind of that thing that we all want everybody to realize when we're taking their photos. Like, you deserve to leave that legacy behind in something tactile, like the photo album for your family. It just really, I loved that, reading that.
Oh, that's so good. I mean, whenever like you kind of write something, I think especially, you know, mothers just, we spend so much of our time creating these homes full of love, you know, and in tiny ways. I'm not even talking about like the very overt ways that we love our kids, right? But just this, the kind of the tiny acts that are constant. You know, the caring is pretty much constant when you're a parent, but very specifically in motherhood, I think it's overlooked and undervalued.
Right.
And, you know, we do it as a society, culturally, you know, motherhood is like this thing that we really take for granted, but actually to do it well is really, really hard. It's really hard.
Yeah.
It's a really hard job.
Yeah.
And, but we still do it. We still get up every single day and we do it. And I really just feel that part of the value of this work is that I get to show it back to you, because there aren't many people in our lives that will stop and say, well, I see that you have made 3 meals today and you've washed loads of clothes and you've scrubbed the floor and you, like, you know, made your son feel better when he was really sad that he couldn't play with his friends. But, you know, I can go in and just take photos of you being that loving person and then hand that back to you. And I just feel like there's something so powerful in that, in just bearing witness to someone else's everyday life. We all want to be seen.
Right.
We all want to be valued and understood in some way. And, you know, family photography isn't just about the mother. However, I am a mother and I've been in, you know, I have those feelings all day long. So I feel like that is part of the value of hiring me, that I understand and I do see you and I do acknowledge what you're doing.
I love it. I could just listen to you talk forever. I really can.
You're so
I really
lovely.
Can. I think you're, I love you. And you're a film photographer among many other titles. So, and you do the hybrid film and digital when you do those family shoots, right?
Yeah. I mean, that's actually really new because I joke in my Instagram bio that, you know, I'm old enough to have learned on film, but young enough to be obsessed with Instagram. I mean, that just sums it up, really. So I did learn on film and then kind of stopped shooting, like in my mid-20s, I stopped because digital cameras were the thing.
Yeah.
So I was like, of course, just forget that. This is so much easier. And then I didn't come back to film photography until, I would say, maybe like 4 years ago. And I ran this thing called the slow photography movement because I just,
I remember this.
So I kind of, I mean, this is just a really good example of like, oh, this interests me. Let's go and do this for some time.
How did I forget that was you? Oh my gosh.
Probably. Well, also, I mean, I changed my business name. So it you might not have like put the two
it
together.
It used to be Baby Picture This.
Exactly. Yes.
Yeah. And I remember that.
And so part of the slow photography thing was that I introduced the topic of shooting film because really I just wanted to try shooting film again because I hadn't shot film for ages. And I obviously was like, oh, why did I ever give this up? Like, I mean, it was so good because I was also, you know, there's muscle memory there, but really you feel like a beginner again. And I, you know, sometimes that's hard, but also sometimes that's really fun, especially when you feel like you have been doing something a long time, right? So I started shooting film then, and then I made the decision like, okay, I'm just going to shoot my personal life on film now, because kind of I just was at that point where I took too many pictures. And then afterwards I'd be like, why did I do that? I really don't need them.
I'm caught in that right now.
Yeah. It's difficult, isn't it? You're like, oh, drowning in like editing and
stresses me out.
Yeah. And I'm just like, I don't even want to upload. Like, and I'm not the type of person that can cut them down before I upload them, because I know some people do that, but I'm like, if I've taken 1,000 pictures, then they're all going on, and then I'll go through them one by one. So I was like, okay, that's cool, but I hadn't really thought that I would introduce it into my workflow, because it's different. It's a very different way of shooting, and I wasn't quite sure how the hybrid thing would work. And then obviously, this is kind of how I get to most things. I think and think and think and think, and then I'm like, oh, let's just do it. Let's just, what's the worst that can happen? You're going to die. Come on. The film of the session, you know? And actually, it works really nicely, just because I like to have that mix of, I mean, it's really intentional. You have to be really so much slower. There's much more thought behind it. And it also really affects how I shoot my digital now too, which is really nice, because, you know, I think it would feel very manic to go between this kind of shoot, 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 shoot. Okay, now you've got 36 pictures, eke them out. Like you couldn't, you'd be quite schizophrenic to like be going between those two mind frames, wouldn't you? It'd be just too difficult.
Right.
So the whole kind of session takes on a little bit more intentionality. Like I would like to think that I was like that anyway, but it just slows everything down even more, and you can really kind of be there. Yeah. And there's just, I mean, I just feel like it's a bit wanky to say, but like there is something special about film. It's just this kind of, there's something tangible about it that, and especially talking in this context of history, like I do really feel like the images I'm making are for your family history books. Like these are the images that your children are going to pull out and be like, look, there's me with my mum. I mean, we all, anyone who has a parent knows that those pictures are so valuable, right? Like I love any pictures with my mum in, because they're so rare. Like she's obviously not in them. She was taking them. And I think the film again, like just really lends itself to that too. Just this kind of very special. Yeah. This is something. This is meaningful.
It really does.
And the combination seems to work well.
I love it. I love the idea. And one of these days,
when we're allowed to fly again, when we're allowed to go places, and I'm going to come and stalk, I'll come to you, because let's face it.
Oh, I'd love that.
It'll be so much nicer. I'll be like, yes, get to come and see Leanne. I love your beach.
Oh, yeah. We have really great beaches here. Yeah. You know, not all of California does, but in my particular area, right around Laguna, it's they're like some of the prettiest, I would say, of California, besides Northern California. Those are good beaches by Big Sur.
Oh, Big Little Lies country. Is that Big Sur?
The what?
Big Little Lies? Have you seen it?
Oh, yeah. Big Sur? I do think that that's where they did it, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sold.
It's, oh, that's one of my favorite places. That takes like 6 hours of a drive.
Okay.
For us from here. But Laguna Beach is, I mean, we've got some pretty great beaches here.
I mean, I'm coming. I'm ready as soon as I'm allowed.
We're all fantasizing about traveling right now.
Going anywhere.
Now, getting to the morning pages, which is, you are the queen of them. You've been doing them several years, which I think is like, that's a huge accomplishment. I'm 2.5 months deep, I think, or not even that. And it's already been a revelation in my life. So explain to us what the morning pages are, and I'll let you go from there.
Okay. I mean, first of all, we need to congratulate the 2.5 months.
Okay.
Because every day you show up is a big deal.
Yeah. I'm very sporadic right now, though. I'm exchanging, you know.
I was really like that in the beginning.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the morning pages is a practice of writing for 3 pages, a stream of consciousness every day, first thing. And it's an exercise that comes from The Artist's Way, which is the book written by Julia Cameron, which is quite famous. And that's just one of the ways that she suggests to kind of connect to your creativity. Yeah, I think that's a good way to sum it up, really.
Okay. And so how did you come to begin that whole journey with that?
So I feel like we kind of touched on synchronicity earlier, and I feel like the morning pages coming to me was just like the ultimate act of synchronicity, because I hadn't read the book, I hadn't read The Artist's Way, but I just kept reading about people who did or had done at some point morning pages, to the point where I was like, oh, for God's sake, I guess I'm just gonna have to do this thing now. Like, it was just everywhere. And I'm kind of resistant to things that are everywhere, kind of like a bit more like, no, if everyone's doing it, I'm not gonna do it. But there, I mean, it kind of is connected to the book thing, you know, like there are certain things that come to you in your life at the time that you really need them. And my daughter was 3, so I was really deep, you know, I had a son who was older and at school, but, you know, she was home with me all day and I was running a business in the evenings because that was the only time I had, because, you know, I was mothering all day long, then running a business in the evenings. I was sort of getting to that tantrumy stage where I'm just like, oh, I just want something for myself. Like, I'm just giving other people all day long. Mm-hmm. When you kind of, I kind of get to that, you know, when you're getting close to empty and you're like, okay, I need to like pay attention to myself now.
Yeah.
Something has to change because otherwise it's not going to be nice.
Right.
And the morning pages were floating around and I just thought, I really feel like I should stress, I don't know that I stress this enough, but I am not a morning person by any stretch of the imagination. So for me to do it like is like the ultimate desperate act that I thought.
That's me too.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to get up and do this thing in the morning because it goes against every fiber of my being.
Yeah.
To set an alarm before my children are awake. Like, even explaining it, I feel bad because doesn't it just sound horrific?
Yes.
Like, I'm describing the most horrific thing to all of us right now. Like, why would I do this to myself? But that's how desperate I was. Like, I was just like, no, I just need something that's mine. And I didn't even know that this would provide that, in all honesty. You know, it's quite hard to, that's one of the things I do find hard with morning pages, because I think it means something different to every person. So I can't really say to you, do this and it will mean X to you. Like, it's very difficult to put it into that kind of context. And so I was going into it thinking, I don't even know what I'm going to get. I don't know if this is the answer I'm seeking. But you're going to die, so let's try it. Let's just see where this goes. And for the first, you know, like you're saying, you were sporadic with it. Me too. Like, I, for the first 18 months, I found it really, really difficult. I mean, I feel like that's very off-putting. But I wasn't consistent. And I also kind of was coming up with arbitrary rules for myself. Like, I think I still didn't read Artist's Way, by the way, for another, like, 2 years.
Oh,
I just thought, no, I'm just going to do this by itself and see what happens. But I had kind of Googled it, so I knew that she had specific rules around it. And I think somewhere at some point she had said it should be 3 A4 pages. And so I really like clung to this thing of, oh, right, okay, 3 A4 pages. But I had like an A5 notebook. So somewhere in my mind, I was like, right, that equals 6 pages then. So every morning, Laura, you need to write 6. Can you imagine?
Like, oh my gosh.
When I looked back recently, I was like, how did I make it through? But no wonder I found it hard, because it's hard to write anything for 6 pages. So I was like, okay,
really
at some point I abandoned that and thought, no, I think three pages, any size is okay.
Yeah.
And I also really had to work through this thing of, I mean, stream of consciousness writing is very specific writing. It's not what I would call traditional journaling. And also, if you're someone who has ever written, like, I feel like you might be the same, like the blog era.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? If you've ever written a blog or even just Instagram captions, you're always really writing for an audience. And I found it very difficult to disconnect from that voice, to find my actual voice.
I'm finding it difficult. Well, I'm writing it kind of like a diary.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like it though.
Mm.
And I keep trying to switch it up and say, okay, let's do some prompted, you know, things to write about, like a prompted journal type of entry, or trying to switch it up and see what works for me better.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I'm definitely lost in the whole, what am I, how am I writing?
Yeah. I mean, I don't write mine like a diary. And I think, because I know you were in the group, weren't you, like for the first month, and I kind of touched on this idea of prompts, because I think they can be useful, but not in the pages, just because I kind of think, you know, when you have a very formed question, I have a very internal like expectation that I should then give it an informed answer.
Yeah.
And for me, the beauty of morning pages is that you're working in the space of those two things.
I think I missed the part where you said not in the pages.
So I kind of feel like if you're going to use a prompt, do it within the same notebook, but not as the day's writing.
Oh.
Because I kind of have this like idea that like if your things are all in the same notebook together, then there's like a signal to your brain like, ah, oh, this is like an area of things to like explore within, like they're related to each other, right? They're going to sit in my notebook and like mingle when I'm not looking, and then that's how it works in my head. But when I sit down to write, like say I don't know, I can't really think of a prompt question now, like, oh, how do you feel about X? I feel like the question is so formed that then I really feel sudden pressure to write the answer, like the answer, not like a kind of meandering, oh, let's explore my feelings about this, but actually come up with something succinct. Whereas stream of consciousness and pages is so the opposite to that, isn't it? It's it's like, well, I don't know how I feel about this. And then this happened. And maybe actually what I'm thinking of is that thing that happened to me ages ago. And that's making me think, do you know what I mean? Like, you're working in a very different space, I think.
You know what? You hit it on the head there, because I did one the other day and I'm like, I am sitting here trying to think of my answer and I'm wasting all this time. And this is not a stream of consciousness at all.
Yeah.
This is like premeditated. What do I write down here?
Yes. So, and that's, there's the pressure from that. That's so difficult, isn't it? Which is why I kind of like, I'm not a traditional journaler. Like I do find that really difficult, but I can wang on for 3 pages just about my feelings about something that happened 2 weeks ago, like kind of quite easily at this point. But then I do think you can ask yourself questions in a different way. You know, I would kind of suggest writing to yourself as you would think it. So, you know, like, oh, I've been really thinking that I just keep using my pages as a diary and I don't know that I like doing that. Maybe I, you know, why don't I like that? Or, you know, and just kind of free writing from that. And sometimes it will go nowhere. But other times you might just find yourself kind of more in dialogue with yourself. More, it's more conversational.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it does really take time to connect to that voice.
Yeah.
I found anyway.
It does. And I hit a stride, and I have to say I've really turned a corner by doing this. And the one thing I'll say is, you know, I am not a morning person at all. So I bought the book, The Artist's Way, in like 1999, I think.
Oh my God, amazing.
And I didn't read it. I didn't start reading it until now, because I didn't want to do morning pages because I'm not a morning person.
I love that so much. You're like, I'm not going to read any of the book because I don't want to get up.
It's seriously
amazing.
And I hit this wall in life, because I've just been going through a lot of transformation lately, where I realized, okay, this next step in life, I need to start getting up early. I'm not getting things accomplished in the way that I need to, and I've got a lot on my plate, and I've got to change this. So then I decided to do the morning pages in order to change my attitude about it, and it actually did change my attitude about it. So even if I don't get them done, I'm waking up at 5:30 to start the pages, at least.
This is amazing.
And it's truly, truly transforming my life, and it's changing me as a person. And I can't define it, and I can't explain it in any way, but it's given me a purpose in the morning that I didn't have before. Before it was just like, oh, I'll just keep hitting snooze.
Yeah.
But now I have this purpose, and I don't know, it's just the best way I can describe it. And even if I'm sporadic, I don't get down on myself. I just say, okay, I'm going to pick it up again tomorrow.
I love that.
I may have needed the day off.
Yeah.
I'm not going to get upset about it, you know?
Yeah. I think that's so important to remember as well. Like, every day is a new day, but you don't need to carry in what happened yesterday. If you don't want to, you know, like,
right,
that your book is like, this came up too, you know, like, it's interesting the voice that people do have, because some people find that it's not that supportive, that actually they're quite mm-hmm. judgmental of their self when they start writing. And mm-hmm. hopefully, you know, after a while that changes. I think it does change for most people, and they realize, oh, yeah, of course. Like, my book isn't judging me for not turning up today. It's just like, glad I'm here now.
Right.
It's just like, oh.
I think if you do read the book,
yeah,
then you'll know that you're not supposed to judge yourself.
Yes.
But the people that don't read it, they're judging themselves. And then, you know, I've had messages with people. I'm like, everybody does it. Just, you know, it's not supposed to be art. Just write. And they go, oh my gosh, I'm so relieved.
Yeah.
Having
not read the book for half the time I did them. I would definitely recommend doing the book at the same time. Even just, I think it's that thing of having stuff to write about, because if you find yourself thinking, I just don't know what to write about, you would have done some activity from the book that week, and you can just talk about that, you know, even at a very basic level. I feel like it gives you, it helps keep you going from that perspective as well.
Yeah, that's cool. And the scrapbook.
Yes. The life is a scrapbook.
You do put it into your pages, right? Your scrapbooking. No?
So, well, yes. Do you mean like in my actual notebook?
Yeah. Is it in that notebook?
It's kind of like, I do put other things in my pages notebook, uh-huh. but I also just have lots of notebooks.
Me too.
So it's not really like, do you know what? I have found, like, I go through phases, but I found myself with my latest notebook, because obviously I've done a few now at this point. I'm a little bit more precious about it with this, like this particular mm-hmm. one. I'm holding it now just because it's basically my comfort blanket, and I'm unhealthily attached to it, and it just goes around the house with me. But mm-hmm. I've only done one kind of like collagey thing in it, and the rest is actually just pages. But the scrapbooking thing is kind of more I kind of want to say metaphorical than literal, like mm-hmm. it's, I wrote about it on my website, and it was kind of a bit like,
yes,
I felt like because I sent it to you, and I felt like, oh, actually, I don't know that this makes sense now I've sent it to you.
Does, it's so intriguing,
because it's kind like this idea that, you know, through the day, every day, we're just like picking up these little things that nourish us or inspire us, or, you know, that we find curious, like that we're interested in because we're curious, you know.
Yeah.
And sometimes I will, it's a physical thing and I'll put it down. But most of the time, it's not quite that tangible. Like, it's just more of a, more like an inspiration kind of thing.
Is it like a vision board type thing, but in scrapbook form, or?
Yeah. I mean, I feel like I should tell you about my notebooks now.
Yeah.
So I have my pages notebook, which mostly is pages, and sometimes it will be other things that I've, you know, it will be quotes and things, although that happens less now, because something that I learned, I feel like that you'll like this, is this idea of another kind of notebook called a commonplace book. Have you heard of this?
No.
And I read about it on, there's an artist called Austin Kleon.
Oh, yeah.
Kleon. Yes. Yeah. And so he wrote about this on his blog, this idea of this commonplace book, which is like a notebook where you just put everything that inspires you. It's a kind of scrapbook. So I have one of those, but then I also have like that's a small book. Then I also have a very big book, which I would call like Pinterest in a book.
Oh.
Like, I literally just cut things out and stick things in, anything I like.
Right.
It reminds me of like being at school.
Where do you cut it out from? Like, do you screenshot it and then print it?
Sometimes I screenshot and print it. Sometimes like it's a newsletter, or I'll just copy and paste some text into a Word document and print that. Sometimes it's like literally magazines that I'm just ripping up. I mean, it's really kind of teeny high school, like, you know, right. just slap it in. It's kind of like the pages. This isn't art.
Yeah.
It's just something that I really like and I'm going to put it here. You know, it might be useful to me in the future. It might not be, but at this moment I'm just, yeah, it's making me feel something. So let's put it down.
That's really cool. I wrote this down because I wanted to read this. This is what you wrote about your scrapbook. You wrote, "The scrapbook is my religion. I'm like a magpie collecting small, shiny pieces through the day, bringing them to build this nest of ideas and inspiration and nourishment, small prayers and blessings, the seeking, the attention paid." I was like, whoa, this is so intriguing. Truly, like, it makes me want to start doing it, but I wanted to know more about like how you do it.
Yeah. I feel like with that bit, I was really talking more about the metaphorical though, like just like picking up a book and reading. I mean, I always have like 5 books open around the house and I'll just open it to a page and just read a passage. Or I'm like, okay, I'm going to listen to this song now. And that's going to like nourish me for the next 1 minute, 30 seconds. You know, it's not even something, and I wrote that also during that was during the first lockdown when, you know, I knew what my days would look like, right? I knew that I was going to wake up and these are the 3 other people that I'm going to see today. And this is the 1 mile radius of my house that I'm allowed to go. So I'm going to have to really work hard here to find ways to stay inspired, to stay feeling things. Anything at this point. You know, like the daily walk. I mean, I was lucky that that lockdown was spring, you know, just stopping and looking at the, it's that thing of paying attention, you know, like I would just stop and, I mean, I always took my camera and I think photography really is that for me, that it helps me to pay attention. And yeah, that passage. So I would say like, you don't even need a book, Liana. Like, I feel like you are probably doing this all day long anyway, but we don't necessarily view it like this.
I do. Yeah. I
do you know what I mean? Yeah. Like you're, if you're a curious person, then you are seeking out these little bits of things all day long.
Yep.
And they're the things that are going to inform everything.
I'm going to send you a little video when we're done and show you what I have around my office, because I have stacks of pages that I've screenshot and printed out. I have stacks of index cards with quotes, with words. I have stacks of post-its. I have stacks of notebooks. I have stacks of books with markers in pages, pens everywhere. And I feel like it's exactly what you're saying, but I just didn't define it in the way that you are. You
like,
know?
You're just making me think, yeah, this is your religion too.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, it's everywhere around you. Like, and I just think we kind of, that's totally it, isn't it? That you, I mean, even I hadn't defined it to myself like this until I kind of was connecting some dots and other people pointing it out. Because if people, someone had said to me, oh, you nourish yourself really well. And actually, I think what they were talking about was just because just the things that I was sharing, like in my stories, or, you know, because I do share a lot of art or poetry or quotes, you know, because I need it every day. That it literally is a real thing to me that sustains me and helps me, you know, it makes my life meaningful. And so then pointing that out to me, because sometimes when you do things, you know, you kind of just take it for granted that that's the way you are. Like you just said to me, like, this is my life. Like you're describing everything around me, but I hadn't thought about it like that. Like sometimes you need that other perspective to be like, oh yeah, this is intentional. I'm really intentional with this.
Yeah. Yeah. I sort of just kind of feel like it's just a mess that I need to clean up.
No, how dare you, blasphemy. Right.
Now I'm like, oh my gosh, this is my religion.
Yeah.
This is my nest.
I mean, it's like this evidence of this, all the attention that you're paying.
Right.
Isn't it? It's like the evidence of the things that you find meaningful, the things that are filling your days.
Yeah. It would look a little bit crazy to some, but yeah.
Like a crazy hoarder.
to many.
I mean, to me, I'd be like, oh my God, let's open everything. Read everything to me immediately.
I do sometimes think like, oh man, this is going to be interesting for Lane to look through these note cards and pages and papers and books when I'm gone, you know, might be better than photos.
I mean, yeah, she sounds like she's the type of person, I mean, the lucid dreamer. She's going to be fascinated. She's going to love it.
Yeah, I think so. I hope so. I hope somebody is. So my last question for you, until we talk again, is what does living a life of curiosity mean to you?
I think a life of living curiously means being fully alive. The best, I mean, I hate to bring it back to this life and death thing. I don't, obviously. But
that's true.
You know, the things that interest us, that inspire us, that we desire, the whims we follow, you know, they're the things that make us feel alive. So yeah, living a curious life means, yeah, feeling alive, living a fully lived life.
Yep, that's exactly how I feel too. And before we go, where can we find you and what do you have going on right now?
So, I mean, I just feel like I spend a ridiculous amount of time for a human being to spend on Instagram. So that's where you'll find me. and the link's in the bio.
And your handle.
Oh, my handle is, sorry. It's Laura Aziz, but now you're making me think, where's the underscore? I should really know this off by heart. And it's Laura.
I think it's Laura underscore Aziz.
And that's A-Z-I-Z. Yeah. You can find me on Instagram. That's where I am. Too much.
Okay.
In my bio, there's a link to my Patreon and a link to my website. If you would like to hire me to come and bear witness to your life when we're allowed to start shooting again.
I'd love that.
Whenever we're allowed. I miss that. I miss being curious about other people's lives.
I loved getting to talk to you.
Oh, thank
I love
you so much.
That you're morbid like me. And
I mean,
I really, truly love the way that your brain works. And I would love to have you back on again to talk about even more in the future.
More death.
Yeah.
Just remember, everyone.
We'll just do a whole episode on death.
Is that what we're going to call this one? You're going to die, so you might as well listen. I mean.
Yeah. Maybe I will.
Oh, thank you so much. I really love chatting with you.
Oh, thank you,
Laura. I really need a video of all your stuff, of your religion.
I'll send it.
Yeah.
I'll send it, I swear. Okay. I'll talk
to
you. Well, there you go. Was I right or was I right? Something I totally forgot to bring up when we were on our favorite topic of death was in college, I actually took a course on death and dying. We learned all about the stages of death. We went to a mortuary. It was pretty heavy, but yeah, that's how far my interests go in the topic. I hope I haven't scared anybody away. But really, I learned about myself in this episode with her. When she started talking about the nests and the religion, the scrapbooking, and I realized that that's what mine is, it was a pretty big revelation for me. I really have to say, I've always been kind of embarrassed of the way that I have these things everywhere, but I now kind of love it. So I don't know. A lot was learned, a lot was discovered, and I am, like I said, super fascinated with her. So anytime you feel yourself feeling that little twinge of doubt, just whisper to yourself, you're gonna die. Go for it. And as always, stay curious.
If you like this podcast, please give my mommy a 5-star rating and an awesome review, because she's the best podcast writer in the world.